from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this morning when more than an inch of disgusting April snow covered many of our local roadways. And yet we saw a number of people riding their bicycles to work. It is spring, after all, bicycle season, even if that means snow in Rochester. This morning with Beth Adams, I asked the question, are there snow tires for bicycles? Of course, the answer is yes. I'm not the smartest person in the world. And several of you have already emailed me with some great descriptions there. Karen Morgan, among many others. Thank you, Karen, for that great picture to remind me that, yes, there's plenty of things we can do to get around with bicycles, even in the winter. These bicyclists will tell you they can ride year-round. They say it can be done in the Northeast. The question is, does Rochester and do surrounding towns provide the infrastructure and the culture to respect cyclists and to make room? This hour is something we've kind of never done before. Four newcomers to our studio, two of whom have basically ditched their cars for bicycles. We'll talk about that. Two more who have tried that, done so, would like to do it more, but they have felt the need to shift to other forms of transportation for various reasons here in the Rochester area. So let me say hello to them now, and we've got a lot to talk about as we discuss bicycles versus the automobile. Adrian Martin is a cyclist who's with us. Adrian, welcome to the program.
Hello.
And Kristen Small is here. Kristen's they all have different jobs around town. They're all here, though, because of the bikes and cars thing. Kristen, welcome to you.
Hi.
Christine Corrado here as well. Thanks for taking the time to come in, Christine.
Thanks so much.
And John Hoffman is here. John, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having us.
Let's go around the table, and I want to start with your stories. Christine, how did you get here, by the way, today?
I am sad to admit I drove, because that's my main mode of transportation these days.
All right. And so what's your history in terms of transportation, and how do you see it in Rochester?
I grew up on the far west side in a community that has a walk score of 24, which means it's totally car dependent. I didn't know anything different. I lived in a couple of other cities around the world where I was lucky enough to live in places with walk scores up around 80, 90, and bike scores that high too. And then I moved back to Rochester, bounced around a couple different areas, and I am now living in a more car-dependent neighborhood again, and with other complications, including an 11-year-old who would like to bike too, but it's a whole different ball of wax when you're biking with a kid.
Okay, and what's one thing that would start to change that back in the direction of the bicycle where you live?
The infrastructure, which is a big, big challenge, but one I think our region is looking at more seriously these days.
Okay. All right. We'll get to much more there. Adrian, what about you? Why don't we talk about how you got here?
I biked.
You biked here. And for those who kind of turn up their nose at biking on days where there is snow on the ground, you tell them what?
It's kind of just like driving. You go a little slower. You give yourself more room to brake, and you are careful on the turns, and that's it.
No big deal. All right. So tell me your history in terms of transportation, and to the extent that you made a change at all, tell me about that.
I moved here in 2008 from D.C., where I did not drive for 2 years. And moving here in 2008, I started thinking that I would just take the bus like I did in D.C. and experienced RTS reliability and needed to switch to the car. And after a couple of years of driving, it was a pretty short commute, and I was just wondering why I keep driving and then driving myself to the gym when I could just make my workout, my commute. So my wife and I bought bikes, started biking to work instead. One of the big things was that in order to kind of force myself to bike, I gave up my monthly parking spot and paid for parking on a day-to-day basis. So I kind of used my cheapness to force myself onto the bicycle, that really worked in terms of forcing me to bike almost year round.
Almost year round. What is the hardest part of bicycling in this community?
Similar to what Christine said, the lack of infrastructure, lack of protected bike lanes, getting passed by an SUV 2 feet from your head can be unnerving.
Okay. Let's turn to Kristen Small to get a sense for your history with the bicycle.
Yeah.
How'd you get here today?
Well, Megan asked me to come on because I had tweeted that, I think in response to something maybe you guys posted, that I used to bike commute 11 miles a day round trip when I lived in Boston. I'm from the Boston area. And when I moved to Rochester, I lived just a mile, over a mile from my office. and just decided not to keep bike commuting here because it seemed a lot more dangerous here.
Even just a mile away from work?
Yeah. I mean, the options were drive, walk, or bike. I decided to walk because I saw a lot of... There's just doesn't seem to be a critical mass of bikers. And so my worry was I saw a lot of cars making turns, either right or left turns, without looking to check if there was a biker there. And I've been, you know, almost killed a few times as a pedestrian from that situation. And as a, you know, when you're biking, you move a lot faster. And I feel like if cars aren't expecting there to be bikes, they don't check to make sure there are bikes before they turn. So that's what sort of made me a little wary about it.
Is it fair to say you don't fully trust the broader population of car drivers in Rochester then yet with bicyclists?
Yeah, I didn't trust the drivers in Boston either. But the difference was that I was surrounded by just this mass of other bike commuters when I was in Boston. And some of them took it upon themselves to enforce the rules of the road with drivers. Like I've seen, you know, I was behind someone who got cut off by a driver turning right, and the guy actually used both of his hands and slammed them down on the guy's hood and yelled at him. You know? And I was like, okay, that makes me feel safer because other bikers are willing to enforce the rules.
But here it's more lonely.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And also there's sort of a culture of bike commuting there there's enough volume of bike commuters that they sort of expect each other to follow the rules of the road. And you're in a line of people, so you're not the only one. But here I've seen bikers sort of going against traffic and going on the sidewalk, and they're all sort of doing something different. And so that makes me feel like drivers don't really know what to expect. And so if they don't know what to expect, they're not going to be expecting me to go by, and they're not going to be watching for me.
Okay. John, what is your bike story? How did you get here today?
I got here using my bike.
Okay.
I didn't have to go very far. I'm in the Highland Park neighborhood, so
yeah,
it's not that bad. And my story kind of parallels a lot of what I'm hearing. As a kid, I used a bike. I ended up, as I grew up, getting a little heavier, getting a little out of shape, and wasn't able to use bikes, would break bikes when I used them. When I sort of got settled into a career, I finally got to the point again where I could get a bike, use a bike. And I felt this sense of almost childlike freedom getting back on the bike because I was never one that could run comfortably or anything. So here I am able to move on my own at 15 miles an hour, 16 miles an hour on up. And I wanted to apply that freedom. And so when I got to a place where I really could, I started commuting by bike and was able to sell a car. And so now my household is what we'd call car light, just one car in the household. My default is to bike or walk places, and then I'll run errands with my wife using the car.
How often during the week are you driving a car?
2 or 3 days a week. There'll be probably a night where we'll do errands during the week, and definitely a day on the weekend where I'll drive. So that'll be about all I'll do.
What is the hardest thing about doing it this way?
I would have to say for biking, it's really finding and choosing your route. Others have talked about infrastructure. That's a big issue. We also have a unique challenge in Rochester with the sheer amount of snowfall that we have to deal with. And as a year-round commuter, that's a big issue for me. A standard bicycle through some of our unplowed city winters is pretty difficult. So I'm actually looking at investing in a fat bike going forward to kind of get over that hump. And then being able to choose a route that not only gets you where you're going relatively efficiently, but keeps you away from the stressful things. Drivers who might not understand how to relate to bikes is really beneficial.
All right, so I've got a ton of comments that have come in via social media. Listeners, if you want to join the program, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Chris writes to us and says, now that I'm old, I ride to work from April through November. I just love it. Great way to start and end the day. Been doing it for 25 years. I've always been a cyclist, including racing and touring. Paul says, when I first moved to Rochester, I had no car, so I biked, walked, and bused. But in the years since, the convenience of a car has won out. Only bike commute in the summer, and when there's no important meetings or after work events, he says, I sweat a lot. Well, I understand, Paul. I'm with you there. A different Paul says, my spouse and I deliberately stayed in the city so we could both walk to work. We share one car between us for errands. The catch is we choose to send our kids to an independent school, not using the city school choices. In other cities, that wouldn't have been necessary. Okay, so I'm going to take Paul's comment and ask you a question that have come up. I want to ask all of our panelists this question that has come up significantly often when we talk about infrastructure, bicycling, multimodal options. There is a kind of a default assumption that says if you really want to bicycle the majority of your time, you have to live in the city. Can't do it in the suburbs. Christine, true or false?
I'm afraid true. We're too spread out. Rochester suffers from sprawl and lack of connectivity of streets in the suburbs. It's all the tiny neighborhood streets feeding into big commuter arteries. Those arteries are state routes and county roads, where the primary purpose of the road is to move vehicle traffic, automobile traffic at high rates of speed with few stops. And the state and the county do not necessarily acquiesce to the desires of citizens who want to be on foot or on bikes using those routes. So, yeah, suburbs are really tough, even the inner ring suburbs that have a reputation for being walkable and bikeable.
I've recently been told that I was wrong, that it's not illegal to ride a bike in Henrietta. I just think it's very difficult.
And potentially dangerous. And you have very high-speed roads
exactly
that you
right.
have to negotiate around. So
yeah, they're basically surface expressways.
Okay. And I see the phone starting to ring. Let's take that suburb question. Suburb, much harder than the city?
Definitely. I wouldn't say it's not doable, but as someone who rides routinely from the city, a neighborhood I chose because it was bikeable, out to Penfield, it's a lot trickier on my way out there than it would be in the neighborhood in the city. You have drivers who aren't as used to seeing bicyclists because there are not as many on the road. You have a lack of infrastructure. I mean, in several areas in Penfield, there aren't even sidewalks for walkers to be safe. So it gets tough for bikes. There are ways you can manage that with your riding techniques. A common misconception that motorists will have is it's illegal for cyclists to be riding in the road, be using the full lane, but actually that's the safest thing for us to do because it forces motorists to actually go all the way around us and leave us enough space that we aren't hit, sideswiped, knocked over as a result of them passing us. So it's doable. But difficult.
And when you talk about knowing your route, if you are going from the city to the suburbs, how often are you sort of researching that route in advance? How much do you want to know what you're going to encounter?
Oh, I spend a ton of time both researching routes and adjusting those routes based on what feels most comfortable. And frankly, based on the weather and my experiences on a road. So there are certain roads, even in the city, where you know they both seem very bikeable, but the way people actually use them in cars makes them much more or much less dangerous for you. So East Avenue is often tempting, but I know I can't go there during happy hour because there are going to be cars lining it and there's nowhere that I can hide. So I'm going to get into some kind of encounter with a motorist.
By the way, we got an email from the great Dan Lill, who I know John knows. He says, Evan, these folks are all bikers by choice. Don't forget about the folks who don't have that choice, but because of circumstances are forced to bike year-round. And he says, John's a volunteer at our community bike. So shout out to our community bikes. And Dan's right. This is definitely a conversation of privilege. It's a conversation about choices that people can make. And I certainly acknowledge that off the bat here. But it's an important conversation to have because if you are in that situation, do we have a community that provides for that and makes for that opportunity to be there for everybody? Kristen, what do you think? City versus suburbs. If you live in the suburb, can you actively really think about not using a car 5 days a week?
I mean, I have done that before, and it's doable. I think the biggest factor is probably sheer distance for me. You know, like right now I live about 3.5 miles from work, and that would take me probably 20 or 30 minutes to bike to work. And that's actually, it's kind of hard. If there's hills, like it's exercise, you know, it's real physical work. And so if you are bike commuting an hour, you know, you're probably going to need to take a shower when you get to work. So I think, you know, it depends on how spread out things are. And again, like if there's a critical mass of bikers where like cars are actually used to seeing them.
Well, sure. And just as we had the electric vehicle show where more employers, the Chamber of Commerce is urging employers to think about charging stations at work for EV drivers. Maybe more showers at work for bicycle ride. I mean, it's just something. It could be a practical thing. Adrian, what do you think about the whole city versus suburbs equation there?
I used to take my older son to a daycare out in the suburbs, and it was off of the canal bike path. And so I would trailer him out on the canal bike path and then bike into work. And that was really only possible because I happened to live near the canal bike path. The daycare was on the canal bike path. I would not be biking on, like, for instance, East Henrietta Road with my son in a bicycle trailer, because that would be insane. So it's, you know, there are isolated patches of the suburbs that are near the bike paths that where it's okay, but in general, no. And my biking and trailering out to daycare was also made possible because my work had a locker room with a shower, and it had a bike rack that was in a locked garage. So my workplace really made it very, very easy as well.
Yeah, I imagine a much bigger factor when people start to really get serious about bicycling to work there. Let me get to some of your phone calls. And listeners, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Richard in Greece, first up. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I grew up on a bicycle in New York City. I survived. I escaped New York City. And I've taught many people how to drive safely on motorcycles, or at least increase their chances of survival on the road. But there should be as there is for motorcycling, there should be a defensive driving program for cyclists, because they are in dire need of learning how to drive safely, proper lighting, et cetera. Many of the people I see on the road, it's as if they're flaunting an air of invincibility. Well, I personally am not made out of titanium, so I have to be extra defensive with automobiles. When I taught my kids how to drive motorcycles, I told them the mantra you must repeat is, the other drivers are in the process of killing you. And with that concept accepted, go forth. We know from motorcycle injury studies that people tend to look for things equal in size or larger than them. They don't look for motorcycles or bicycles. And now with the amount of texting and talking, distracted driving, I think the plight of the bicyclist is even greater. So but they should have a course. Someone should step. I would be glad to teach a course like that. We need some venue to do it. But I think people could benefit. It might, even if it just saves one person a year, the cost of a funeral, that would be very well worth it.
Richard, thank you for the phone call. Some thoughts from our panelists on that and safety. John, I'll start with you.
Sure thing. Just want to acknowledge there are some great organizations in town already doing stuff like this. I know Rochester Cycling Alliance, maybe the other panel members can speak to others. But we hear a lot, it sounded like part of the concern was, you know, bicyclists don't know what their responsibilities are on the road. Bicyclists are the ones doing wrong. And this is something that comes up a lot in the media. The scofflaw biker flaunting the law. In practice, the biker is not the danger on the road. It's the 3,000 pound and up moving vehicles that could potentially kill someone. So, while there are certainly people misbehaving, studies actually show that bikers and motorists are misbehaving at the same rates. The difference is the car is the thing that's going to kill the pedestrian or the biker on the road. So I'll just throw that in there.
Okay. I saw you nodding over there too, Christine, to some of that phone call.
Yeah. I totally understand Richard's directive to his children. There is that biological thing that kicks in as soon as you're a parent. Protecting your child comes before everything. But protecting with fear and telling our children that they are the ones who don't have the right to the road is not the way I think we want our community going. We want our kids to have a certain level of autonomy that isn't possible right now with the high rate of speed of vehicles, with the cars, as John said, being so large and always going to win in that altercation. I think we do need bicycle education, and there are opportunities in the schools, like the National Bike to School Day. The school district we're in hosts big mass rides and walks to school in the spring and in the fall to educate students. There are bike rodeos hosted at places like the farmers markets in the area, getting kids up to speed on bicycle safety. I don't know that we see the same level of education being directed at drivers. You take your driver's ed when you're, 16, 17 years old, you pass the written test, you pass the driver's test, and you are good to go for the next 60 years of driving. And along the way, you forget that you're sharing the road with pedestrians and bicyclists who have equal right to that space.
I was hoping our guests would fight a little bit more this hour, but there's a lot of agreement on the larger sentiment on need for education, culture, infrastructure improvement. But we're talking about bicycles and cars, and we've got a lot of feedback to work through. John in Rochester is next on the phone. Go ahead, John.
Oh, yes. Hi. I'm John. It's good to talk to you all. I'm a long-time bicyclist. I'm 62. I've been biking around towns for 8 years now, 10. But I take the bus, too, and I've really developed a strategy for my own safety. If I got a long trip, I try and catch the bus if I can, and then bus, bike. For instance, I live in on Averill down by 4th Street Bridge. I'll go up the hill to College Town to go to the CVS pharmacy. I'll ride up the hill because it's a good aerobic thing. But then I'll take the bus back down because the bus runs off and I still get a good workout. I'll ride all the way. I'll ride to my neighborhood here in South Wedge to the parking area, kind of diagonally, cut through, you know, Clinton, Goodman, side streets, and get over to my daughter and son-in-law's house. But I've learned to be a defensive bike rider, and I make eye contact with drivers, and sometimes it PO's them. But still, I want to see where they're at. If they're paying attention, if they see me, mainly.
Well, and John, I want to pick up that thread right there, and yeah. I appreciate the phone call. I want to ask our guest in studio, based on what John is saying, he's talking about making eye contact with drivers and really kind of keying in, do they see me? What percentage, let's go around the table. Adrian, what percentage of cars on the road do you think are appropriately aware of bicyclists and respond appropriately to bicyclists? What percentage?
I'd say probably 80% or 90%.
Okay.
But it only
takes... Still a lot that are not.
Yeah, it only takes one to kill you, so.
Okay. Christine?
I'm less optimistic, and I'm the reluctant driver in the group. I think maybe 60% are aware of the bicyclists. And on the flip side, when I'm on my bike, I try to be aggressively connected visually with the drivers because I know they're not looking for us.
Kristen.
Yeah, I think I'm more pessimistic. I'd say maybe 50%. And when I was in Boston, I always, at every stoplight, I always made sure to bike way up front so everyone who was waiting for the light to change could see me.
I mean, that's half the cars that you think are, at least if not aware of you, not responding appropriately, not respecting your space, maybe behaving dangerously towards you. That's half.
Yeah, I guess that's been my experience.
That is a lot. John?
I don't know about particular numbers. I'll say, echoing Adrian, that it only takes one or two.
Yeah.
It seems to me that a lot of what I see on the road is not necessarily all that distracted while actually driving, but when I'm sitting at a light and I look around, there are an awful lot of people looking down. So that makes me scared every once
in a while. John, looking down doing what?
probably at a phone, but you never know. I certainly can't make eye contact with them.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on Twitter. So, and by the way, what you just heard from Kristen, is who has lived in Boston, is this is not a case for Rochester, where a Bostonian says, hey, I came from Boston where 99% of the drivers get it, and in Rochester it's 50. You've seen this problem elsewhere. This is not unique to Rochester.
No, definitely not. Yeah, it was more the protection of being with other bikers that I felt there that I don't feel here.
Well,
that was the difference.
Here is a piece that I didn't expect to generate the buzz it has, and it certainly has on our Twitter feeds and elsewhere. And so let me just read a little bit from Arian Horbovitz, who writes a blog called The Urban Phoenix. And he says, maybe we need to get back in the sidewalk thing. So I know already. did I catch you shaking your head already, Adrian? Okay. So Arian says the following. He says, our roads are so unmanageable and unsafe by bike that most casual riders would never think to ride with traffic. However, there is such a strong stigma that comes with riding on the sidewalk as an adult that the casual rider feels uncomfortable there as well. My point is that perhaps we have alienated generations of potential bicycle riders by shunning sidewalk use. Maybe we should revisit the idea of welcoming bikes on the sidewalk in our less dense urban areas, thus encouraging an experience that might be more comfortable for the casual cyclist. Now, he goes on to say a lot more about that, but I want to start. You're shaking your head right away. That's not the problem to you.
So, legally, bikes have the right to be on the road. Arian knows that, I'm sure, but also just in terms of speed differentials, at least in the city where you have 30 mile an hour speed limit, I do maybe 23, 24 miles an hour on my bike, and theoretically the cars are doing 30. So maybe there's a speed differential of 10 miles an hour if they're going a little over. But a person walking is doing maybe 4 or 5 miles an hour. So there's a bigger speed differential between me and the pedestrian and me and the car. So if I hit a pedestrian, you know, I could potentially cause them damage if I'm doing 20 miles an hour on a sidewalk. And it's also a lot, you know, it's relatively easy to, you know, when there's a speed differential of only 10 miles an hour to kind of merge into traffic,
What if you widen the sidewalks?
Well, if you widen the sidewalk, you might as well just put on some paint and have a bike lane on it. You know, that'd be great.
Yeah, do a Lake Avenue.
Yeah.
We already have that sort of bike lane along Lake Avenue, and it's great, in my opinion.
But also, I mean, I would say that if you're biking with kids and you're going slow, then biking on sidewalks works. But the other reason I would push back against biking on sidewalks is that a lot of our roads have no sidewalks. So what do you do if you're going down East Henrietta Road? There is no sidewalk. So then you're just saying some roads should be off limits for bikes. Mm.
And I think that's kind of the problem with the way this debate is framed sometimes. We see it sometimes as cars versus bikes, and that's a temptation we have in the media. What we're really looking for is equity. We want everybody to be able to get where they're going. We're not saying everybody gets to go there in a luxury car. We're saying everybody gets to go where they're going. And so people should have options in that way. Since we don't have a public transit system that's as robust as maybe we would want, I think bikes are a necessary tool to have in the toolbox to help make sure that equity is there.
Go ahead, Christine.
Oh, and I was going to just add, you know, if we want to build a culture of bikeability, if we don't want more me's out there where I was a biker and now I'm a driver because I want I've got the added complication of getting my kid around. If she's going to learn how to be a good bicyclist, we've got to be able to have options to be on the shoulder, in the street, or on the sidewalk, and make it and lower the barriers to learning to be a good bicyclist early, not learning to be a good passenger, and then having to learn the hard way later how to be a good bicyclist.
By the way, a lot of pushback. Yellow House Bicycle says, no, 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 no. Too confusing for drivers and a liability issue for bicyclists to use the sidewalk. And by the way, they say much love to Arian. He's a stand-up guy. But on this one, no. we also got... So I don't know where they stand, but I think they're not in favor of it. We also heard from Walk Bike Pittsford on Twitter, who said, we need safe bike infrastructure to encourage regular everyday people to consider biking as a viable option for those shorter trips. Sidewalks are pedestrian infrastructure. In the village, we are often forced onto the sidewalk to run errands because there is no bike infrastructure and traffic moves too fast thanks to suburban sprawl that sacrificed the heart of the village to through traffic. Biking on the sidewalk puts pedestrians in danger and is confusing for drivers. So I think Arian is what Aaron is really doing is airing out the frustration that there's not good enough bike infrastructure, but for most of the bicycling community, I'm not hearing that sidewalks are where we want to go with this. So let me grab Tom next on the phone. Go ahead, Tom.
As a younger rider, we used to ride on the side of quite a bit, but we had to jump the curb. Today, we don't have to jump the curb. The other thing is people at red lights are only looking for the light to change. They're not looking for people on the crosswalk or bikes or anything else. The same with right on red. So the point being there is that all bikers should realize that point. And if you're there's a bike like a car like on a one-lane street or two-lane street, try to look them in the eye before you cross in front of them. Or else don't cross in front of them because they're not looking for you.
Yeah, Tom. Go ahead, Tom. Go ahead.
The other thing is everybody's speeding. If I'm doing 55, everybody's passing me. If I'm doing 30, everybody's still passing me. So I think the county or something should look into that because, you know, as you said, a 3,000-pound car against a bike is dead, deadly.
Yeah, Tom, thanks for that. Similar advice and ideas of just awareness. And on that note, we just heard from Jesse Pierce, who is the Western New York Regional Coordinator for the New York Bicycling Coalition. He says that they've got their first bike course of the season starting tomorrow. Registration for that particular class is full, but they're doing a class at the Brighton Rec beginning on May 30th. So if you want to start a class the end of May at the Brighton Rec on bicycling through the New York Bicycling Coalition, you can contact them. So they've got a lot of interest in that. There's clearly a lot of interest. The question is there the right kind of infrastructure? Well, you can take more of your phone calls after our only break of the hour. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. What would it take for you to ditch your car most of the time? No one is here saying cars are evil or they will never drive a car again. But people like John, only 2 days a week really in a car. He's spending most of his time without it. Adrian as well. And our other guests, Christine and Kristen, have experience using a bicycle most of the time, and they'd like to see our community a little better suited in terms of culture, education, and infrastructure. So a lot to think about there. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections. When it comes to covering news in America, where are the journalists of color? And in particular, where are the women of color in American journalism? The impact of having journalists of color, women of color, in newsroom staffs, and the problems and the gaps that come when newsrooms don't have that. We'll discuss it Friday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Whoa, all of a sudden the phones are ringing off the hook again. Let me just read a couple of quick emails before I get back to your phone calls. This comes from Brendan. As someone who recently took driver's education and am now a full-time bike commuter with no car, there is no material whatsoever in driver's ed required about dealing with bicycles on the road. There is also next to no enforcement of drivers obeying the laws. But I want to hit Brendan's point there. Driver's ed, I certainly don't remember driver's ed class, so it's been a while. But is that true? Is that as far as we know? And if that is true, I assume Brendan's correct about that. That should change, shouldn't it?
There was just a survey out recently from, I want to say from the New York State DMV, that asked whether or not there should be more attention paid to bicycling rules of the road in driver's ed. And stunned me because I'm back in the dark ages when I took driver's ed way back in the 80s. I have a vague recollection of some bicycling instruction, but maybe that's dropped off over the years.
Hmm. Yeah, Evan, I have something to say here.
Yeah, yeah.
I think actually you can compare this to, you know, I think there's a big power differential between bikers and drivers. I feel that both as a driver and as a biker. You know, that we have to talk about because it's similar to sort of like when you're a woman who shows up for the first time on a college campus and the first thing you get is a rape whistle and a list of ways to avoid getting sexually assaulted. you know, and we don't talk about, we're just now starting to talk about how you have to teach things like consent to both boys and girls. It's not just on women to, you know, like police what they're wearing or avoid walking at night. And I think, you know, obviously it's not the same thing, but it's sort of similar in that, like, we're putting all the burden here on the people that have less power in the situation. We're saying, bikers, you need to be aware. You need to be educated.
You need to make eye contact with that motorist who's looking down at their phone right now.
Yeah. And so I think that the caller's point was really well made, that, like, there should be something in driver's ed because the drivers have really, a lot of the time, more control in the situation.
Well, and Ian writes to say, in response to the caller John, it's difficult to make eye contact when a car is coming up from behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, during the summer, I commute via bicycle from the South Wedge to my office on State Street. I had a few close calls this past summer, one involving a pothole and a few involving cars, but I am most surprised and irritated by close calls with city buses. They do not always respect the bicycle lanes and often pass too close, and I thought about contacting someone at RTS about this. Ian, thanks for the email. Consider them contacted. I know they listen. This is where the community comes to have a conversation. And RTS, nice people, but it's a nice thought to make sure that their drivers always understand bicycles on the road, too. Anybody else had any issues with buses, or John?
I got to throw in, I had to email the Brighton Highway Department about a month ago because one of their plow trucks nearly scraped me with a plow. So.
All right, so good, especially if you're in public works, good for everybody thinking about this. Julian and Geneseo, let's see if our panel says yes or no. Car drivers must get licenses. Why not bicyclists getting licenses?
So this seems to go back to that power differential thing, right? And I don't know about you folks, but I subscribe to the idea that with great power comes great responsibility. You are buying into a car. It's a 3,000-pound machine with hundreds of horsepower. You are the one who has the potential to kill people. The onus should be on you to be safe. I try and make sure I'm upholding my side of that when I am the one driving. I try and make sure I'm not in the way of folks and messing them up when I am on my bicycle, but I need that deference as a cyclist. I'll also say, in terms of societal impact, my bike is not tearing up the roads in the same way your car is. I am not threatening people's lives in the same way that your car is. So the need for licensing is not as great there. Certainly we'd like to see more safety education for all involved, but licensing is not really necessary. And frankly, insurance, homeowners insurance, health insurance covers most of the things that a cyclist would be liable for in that event. So people who are concerned about that are looking for a problem that's not there.
Okay.
Given that cars also run people walking over, the next step logically would be licenses to walk.
That's a slippery slope I don't think anybody wants to go down. By the way, before I come back to your calls, Todd, Alex, we're coming to you in just a second. One of our cantankerous regulars named Robert emails the program to say, why is it okay for bicyclists not to obey traffic laws? I think Robert is attacking a straw man. I don't know anybody saying it's okay for bicyclists not to follow traffic laws, but do we occasionally encounter bicyclists who could maybe do better? How do you think? I asked you about the culture of cars vis-a-vis bikes. What percentage of bicyclists that you see, fellow bicyclists on the road, are obeying the laws properly? Adrian?
Pretty high.
Pretty high number?
I moved here from D.C., where bicycling culture is much different. I did not bike in D.C., but I remember seeing, for instance, you know, the Idaho stop, where you kind of coast through a stop sign, making sure that you look both ways, is ingrained in D.C., and I remember seeing a bicycle the rider scream and curse and hit a taxi cab for stopping in a stop sign because he was going to do an Idaho stop. And, you know, in that, in D.C., that did not surprise me at all. In Rochester, the main things you see are biking against traffic, which is dangerous. But in general, people are much more respectful of the biking laws here.
All right, going around the table, Kristen.
Yeah, I think this is something that everybody... We all share the responsibility here, and I wouldn't give bikers all that much more credit than I gave drivers. I've seen a lot of folks go in the wrong direction in traffic, and that's part of the reason that I've stayed away since I moved here, because I feel like like there's, it's sort of a trust relationship, and drivers also need to know that bikers are going to obey the rules of the road so they can have some predictability about what bikers are going to do.
Is this a case where more critical mass would change that, and was it better in Boston?
Yes, okay. I would say that definitely was. And I think that's the culture thing. If there's enough bikers, and especially bikers that are modeling the rules that you're supposed to follow, some people don't know that you're supposed to follow the rules of the road when you're on a bike. And so when you see that, you just sort of do it because other people are doing it.
Got it. John?
I think, you know, everybody's got that personal story about this one time I saw a cyclist in traffic misbehaving.
Yep. Yep.
They stand out because maybe you aren't as used to seeing cyclists in traffic. But when we look in an aggregate, when we look at the studies, cyclists aren't committing any more offenses than people in cars. The difference is the consequences of those offenses. If I run a red light in a car, there are more consequences than if I run a red light on a bicycle.
But John, stay with me here. If I just look at data and facts, I can do that. But what if I have one anecdote that's really powerful that doesn't at all line up with data, but I still remember it? Shouldn't my emotion trump facts?
I think that's unfortunately a sensible way to get to the presidency nowadays. But
I didn't open that door.
Applicable all the time.
I was being cheeky. Okay, but John's got a good point here. Everybody can remember one moment where a bicyclist did something crazy, or you saw a car sideswipe somebody. That doesn't necessarily mean that really fits the broader picture here. Christine, some thoughts from you on bicyclists?
Sure. So I moved here from Madison, Wisconsin. That was my most recent stop before coming back to Rochester. And in Madison, it's a bike-centric city, major university, and the state capital there. People of all ages are biking, and Midwestern ethic is you follow the rules. Everybody knows the rules of everybody, the littlest bicyclists all the way up to the biggest ones. And when I first got back here, having had my formative bicycling years be in Madison, I followed the rules and was stunned when I saw how people didn't follow the rules of the road. And to me, it looked like more people were unaware of the fact that their traffic, as Kristen said, that they have to follow the rules of the road, because there are so many fewer bicyclists here, and it seems to be almost exclusively, 20-somethings, 30-somethings who are already convinced that they're invincible and that the rules may not apply to them. So, you know, it's a whole bundle of reasons why we notice more bad biking behavior here in Rochester. Fewer bicyclists, mostly bicyclists who are younger and perhaps not as aware of how they fit into traffic overall. I was floored.
All right, let me get to your phone calls. Back to the phones we go. Todd in Rochester is next. Go ahead, Todd.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Good, good. Yeah, I just thought that rights and responsibilities become ridiculous when effectively a car can kill you. You know, that was my thought. You need to know where you are. You need to keep it real. You need to bike accordingly or drive accordingly.
Okay, I take the point, but are you're putting more of the onus of responsibility than on the automobile? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, not at all.
Okay, okay.
If you're in a car, you need to be responsible for your awesome power, right? If you're on a bike, you do need to assume that they're trying to kill you, because effectively that's where the balance is. I mean, you have to keep it real. It's like, oh, but I have the right to be there. Well, yeah, okay, but you're still in peril. So bike accordingly. You know, always watch, always be following the rules, always be visible, you know.
All right, Todd, well, thank you. Is there general agreement, or is that a little... Adrian, you're nodding.
I don't think anybody is saying that you should bike as if you are invincible or that you should ignore all laws. So.
Okay. Thank you, Todd, for the phone call. Just got an email from Rory, who is in Philadelphia. He says, our whole family rode right through the heart of the city. They have designated arteries that form a grid, and it works beautifully. Thank you. So, interesting. I haven't bicycled in Philadelphia. I appreciate that, Rory. So there's a reference point for somewhere that they think perhaps they do it better. Back to the phones we go, and this is Alex next on the phone. Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, Evan. How's it going?
Good.
Good. Yeah, I missed part of the show, so I apologize if this was already covered. But I think we're forgetting about a whole subsect of people in the city that don't have a choice, and either our public transportation or a bicycle is pretty much their only option. And so for that reason alone, I think I can't understand why sometimes the city isn't more bullish about creating better infrastructure for cyclists.
That is a point that came up, but I think you just added some context to it that I didn't consider earlier. So thank you for that, Alex. And let me explain what I mean. I mentioned earlier, this is a conversation of privilege. This is a conversation of, you know, if you are in a position in life where you can choose to try to live without a car, to bicycle to work, you've got a job that is stable, that you like, that you've got multimodal options. Yeah, that's a point of privilege. I think what Alex is saying is, given the fact that there is a significant part of our population that isn't in that place of privilege, that by default we should have more emphasis on better infrastructure and better bicycle options and more safety and better culture. And that is a point that I ignored earlier, and I'm really glad to hear it from Alex. Did you see that in Boston? Was there better basic infrastructure, whether it was lanes or just support for bicyclists who needed to be bicycling as opposed to people who just wanted to, Kristen?
I mean, this was over 5 years ago, and so I wouldn't say not really, not a ton of better infrastructure. I mean, Boston is a really windy, sort of crazy, inefficient city,
yeah.
and it really was the bikers had to create their own infrastructure, like human infrastructure.
Well, then let's create a wish list from all four of our members of the panel then on what, you know, what your wish list to change, to improve when we talk about infrastructure, what we mean. What's at the top of the list for you?
Well, I guess what I've been saying, it's sort of catch-22, because what I'd like to see is more bikers, but I'm not really helping with that situation. Because
you're not bicycling as much as you
yeah,
used to.
Yeah, I'd like to come back to it in the future and be part of that movement.
So that's a chicken and egg thing. The culture will change with more critical mass of bicyclists, but barring that happening overnight, are there infrastructural changes? Are there anything else that could happen?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, I think we're seeing some positive changes now, like if you look at Union Street, but we were talking before the program between ourselves, the panelists, that I was just wondering, does that connect to anything? So I guess, like, you know, safe routes for bikers. Now, like, I can see a part of my route that I feel very comfortable on because it's like the Genesee Riverway Trail. But how do I get there? I don't feel safe on the road that takes me from my house to that trail.
Okay.
Right. So I'd say for what I'm seeing, a connected grid, more protected bike lanes would really help to move folks who are concerned about how do I take my kid along, who aren't as confident riding in the street. Because it's one thing for me as like a 6'5", 250-pound white guy out on the road who's physically intimidating to be riding around. It's a different thing if you present differently, if public spaces are less safe for you in the first place.
What's a protected bike lane look like, by the way?
Protected bike lane uses some kind of blocking mechanism, usually plastic bollards that would deform rather than scratch up a car or mess up a car, just to mark off, like, this part is where the bicyclists go, this part is where the cars go. And if you hit it with your car, it's not really going to damage the car. It'll make a nice noise. You'll be reminded you need to get over. And it's a nice psychological enforcement more than anything, because if you're going to push your car through it, you're going to be able to push your car through it.
And where's one place where we do see those here?
Well, we've seen, I frankly don't know of a protected bike lane here, except for
like
curb protected bike lane. So Lake Avenue is technically, with the curb, would be sort of like a bike lane. They're using a different height to do that. However, there have been some less than legal efforts to install them on places like Exchange that the city responded to simply by uninstalling the material put there. The consequence we saw was they were broken pretty quickly by motorists who didn't understand how the bike lane was supposed to work and then taken down by the city.
Okay. Christine, your list.
So I've got two things on my wish list. One, I want people in the suburbs especially to recognize that the way that the suburbs are set up, you pay your taxes to have beautiful parks and lovely libraries and good schools, but you pay a tax that you don't even realize you're paying because you need a car to get to those safely and effectively. There's just no connectivity between our neighborhoods and the shared community assets, and we need to rethink that and recognize that car is a tax we didn't ask for. And then I would love to see the state and the county highway departments start to really respond to what people have to say about what they want the streets coming through their community should look like. East Avenue, the whole discussion about that has been so eye-opening for so many people and for the state and the county and the towns, recognizing not all of the residents who pay for those roads want to have a high-speed throughway going mm-hmm. through their areas. So if we can change those attitudes in those two areas, I think a lot of the other things we're looking for would fall into place. And then Kristen and I would both be biking more instead of driving
back on the
more.
Roads and a bicycle more. About 30 seconds, Adrian.
Protected bike lanes obviously would be huge. If they would be plowed, like in Montreal, that'd be fantastic. Montreal gets just as much snow as we do. A ton more people bike because they have plowed protected bike lanes. But then also, you know, we feel like bike infrastructure has to cost money, but things like speed cameras or increased enforcement on drivers of unsafe passing, that can also be really effective and doesn't break the budget.
And keeping people from parking in bike lanes.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah. John almost fell over dead there just a second. Stop parking in bicycle lanes. That's what I'm saying it on behalf of John. Was that effective?
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay. I want to thank our panel for being here with some very interesting perspectives, creating a really good menu of what we can do better for bicyclists, which is good for everybody, by the way, whether you bicycle or not. Adrian Martin, Kristen Small, Christine Corrado, John Hoffman, thanks to all of you for being here and sharing your insights with us. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, who bicycled to work today and is probably bicycling right back home. We always see him out there, always wearing his helmet, he says. And Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely afternoon, however you're getting around. And we will talk to you Friday on Member Supported Public Radio.